is ESPN Chicago, WNVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good afternoon and welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight, and you can celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be at the ballpark for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Appreciate y'all being on the show this afternoon. I'm sure at the start you can kind of, I'm a little under the weather. I had a massive sinus infection in late last week. It is still hanging around, so I apologize for the tenor of my voice. We're going to work through this. We're playing hurt this afternoon is what we're doing. And because of that, we're going to hear from some other folks quite a bit in this show this afternoon. As you know, we've got Sox Fest coming up on Friday and Saturday this week. 1 week from yesterday, I suppose. Sox Fest, the first time since 2008. I'm very excited about Sox Fest Live and looking forward to seeing everybody at the Rimowa Theater. More on that in just a little bit. But we got some headlines as well, and some prominent names in the White Sox front office spent a little bit of time talking about the future of the White Sox in this past week. So I think you'll get a first chance to hear from David Keller, the new director of international scouting for the White Sox, brought over from the Mets and into the White Sox organization. As you know, one of the biggest headlines in baseball was late last night. Roky Sasaki, an international free agent, signed with the Dodgers for, I believe, $6.5 million. Still sorting through some of those reports, but that's basically all of the Dodgers' international signing money. The way that all works is each team gets a certain pool of money to sign international free agents, and you've got to play within that pool to sign all the guys you want. Now, the reason that Sasaki is such a gigantic topic of conversation isn't just because he's going to the Dodgers and enriching that starting pitching rotation. I mean, it's like eight or nine deep now, and they've got four or five guys who all could be good out for the year in 2025. No, it's not just because of that. It's not just because Sasaki could be a top-of-the-rotation guy, maybe not next year, mid-rotation at best. Who knows? I mean, the scouting report on him is pretty great. Not to say that there aren't some concerns, definitely, about Roky Sasaki, but also the third thing is, you know, the Dodgers are a pretty active team on the international market. And because they had to essentially turn about on their deals with other international free agents, that released a lot of those players to the rest of the marketplace. And the White Sox, among other teams, were able to pounce on some players that thought they had a home with the Dodgers, but were now looking for other places to go because they decided Roky Sasaki was going to be it for them. And it's a solid decision by them, but it certainly allows the White Sox to pick up where they left off and get themselves Orlando Patino, who's a talented young prospect. We'll talk about him. Well, we'll let David Keller talk about him in a little bit here in just a moment. But we'll get to the international signing class, which is a good one as it regards. I try not to get into the rankings of international prospects. It's really difficult to do kind of a ranking system. And I think anybody who tells you that, they signed number 18, or they signed number 20, or they signed 55, sure, I guess. And a lot of places just rank based on the dollar amount that player signs for, which means Roky Sasaki would be number one because he signed for $6.5 million. That's, I guess, neither here nor there. But you go based on some of the scouting reports from some of the guys the White Sox are kind of nabbing in this international marketplace: Oscar Patino, Alejandro Cruz, Yoel Rodriguez, and some others. There's some good names in this group. And of course, international free agents, with the exception of a few, Roky Sasaki being one, it's going to be a while before they make their debut stateside, much less make the major leagues. So it's a bit of a waiting game. And like a lot of the things that Chris Getz, new general manager of the White Sox, has been doing here in getting the White Sox back to playing the kind of baseball that they want at Wrigley Field, it has to do with building the infrastructure around it. And this is part of infrastructure building on the player side of things. But there's a lot more to it as well that I think would be interesting for you to hear from David Keller in just a bit. We are also on the show this afternoon going to hear from Mark Burley. Now, I don't have to introduce Mark Burley to you the way we did Roky Sasaki. I mean, you know Burley. He's awesome. He's the best. He joined the Carmen and Yurko show earlier in the week. He's going to be at Sox Fest on Friday. So those of you who have tickets, you'll see him there. Those of you who want tickets, buy them for Friday. You'll see Mark Burley. Burley doesn't do a lot of interviews. So the fact that he did means we'll play it here on White Sox Weekly. All that coming up in just a little bit. But let's get into the press conference David Keller had with White Sox beat reporters. Reminder, Keller is the new international scouting director for the White Sox and is taking over a system and revamping a system that needs a little bit of revamping over the last couple of years. So Keller, first and foremost, talked to White Sox beat reporters about what the focus has been in terms of reworking the international scouting department for the White Sox. And, you know, credit Marco Patti and the rest of the staff that came before him, because in this year's scouting class, in this year's international class, yeah, you're landing some players that Keller and his new group had scouted or talked with or whatever. But for the most part, just the way this whole thing works, you're bringing in a lot of players that did have a lot to do with or a lot of a conversation with the prior regime. And Keller talks about that and how they're trying to work things through from here and into the future.
I think the starting point for me and for this group was to develop a thorough process that would aid us in our pursuit of talent. Utilizing different parts of our organization. We wanted to leverage resources across the organization to help us make evaluations. We wanted to take a holistic approach to player evaluation within that process. We want to obviously scout them. We want to see them, but we want to measure and collect objective data that can inform our decisions as well. Along with that, we're using video. We're doing everything we can, taking all the information at our disposal to make good decisions. And then the last point that I would make, Lamon, is that we want to be exhaustive. We believe talent comes from anywhere and everywhere. And as a part of that, we want to, you know, make our presence felt in the areas where talent is coming from. And the way we do that, in my opinion, is we build relationships with trainers and agents, and we become trusted partners in this business with them. So those have been the focal points. Obviously, there have been a lot of moving parts beyond that, but those are the three main things that we focus on.
Now, since the international marketplace, like I said, with few exceptions, comprised of young players, 16, 17, 18-year-old players, young guys for the most part, one of the things that Keller was asked about being able to do was sell these very young players on an organization that both needs youth and can get that youth to the big leagues by virtue of them, frankly, not being as blocked as in other places because this is a rebuilding franchise. And while that hurts to say in some ways, it is certainly the way you weaponize that for yourself as an organization. So here's Keller on that aspect of things.
We certainly wanted to, we always want to put our best foot forward with these players, with their families, with the trainers and agents. We want to make sure that we're investing in building relationships with people who are developing these talented young players. And as a part of that, we certainly want to sell Paul Janisch and our farm system and player development group as being at the forefront of developing players and working towards aggressively promoting young players who are talented and do what we hope they can do, which is perform on the field. So we absolutely talk about that with trainers, agents, players, and their families, and hope that they understand that the opportunity in the Chicago White Sox organization is a positive one for a variety of reasons.
Keller was kind enough to give a bit of a thumbnail, a scouting report, on a couple of the signees the White Sox were able to bring in. And as I mentioned, Orlando Patino, one of the guys that the Dodgers thought they had all locked up, Orlando Patino is now a White Sox signee. He is an outfielder. And Keller talked about not just the player himself, but the process that led Patino to the White Sox.
This was an opportunity that was presented, again, as a reflection of some really diligent work by our group in Venezuela, and put us in a position that when his agent decided to make him available, we were able to see him live and in person. I think we were the first team to do that. And that, I can't overstate that, that doesn't happen without really good people on the ground. So that happens first and foremost. We see the player. We're able to gather as much information, data, and resources that we can on not just his physical performance on the field, but also, you know, what his home life is like, what his makeup is like. And the further we dug into that, we decided to make him a target. And again, Chris giving our group the flexibility and determining that it was a worthwhile venture. You know, his backing and trust means a lot. And, I think we were able to act once we got his blessing. From a player standpoint, James, Patino is someone who is a physical athlete. We are very excited about this young man's athletic ability. He's someone who is who can impact the baseball. We believe in the power potential in the bat, but we don't think it's a power only type of package. We think that there's currently there's limited chase, there's limited swing and miss, and we think that he has a chance to be a dual threat bat combo, hit and power, and enough athleticism and run tool to begin in center field. And if at some point he would have to slide, we are confident and we believe that the power is going to translate to a corner if that has to happen.
Alejandro Cruz, another big name, third baseman, infielder, that might have a couple more positions up his sleeve. We'll see. Another, you know, well-regarded prospect that many in who really follow the international scouting market figured the White Sox had locked up. Keller on Alejandro Cruz.
What I can tell you more broadly about Alejandro Cruz is he's a good looking young guy. It's a tall, athletic, lean frame, one that has room to add strength. He's a polished defender at third base. And I think the thing that stands out in my short period of time watching him play is that he puts together professional at bats. You know, we're going to find out very quickly how that translates into the DSL and into pro baseball. But obviously, it's our hope that those things carry over and allow him to be successful on the field.
Yobal Rodriguez, right-hander with some serious gas, another guy that the White Sox brought in, and Keller spoke pretty highly of not just his abilities, his will to compete.
Listen, I like Yobal quite a bit. I'm very excited to see him on the field for a variety of reasons. One, it's a good frame. It's a body that can add additional weight and muscle. We've seen him up to 93 on the mound. He's an athletic mover with a repeatable delivery. He throws an elite amount of strikes, and he's got a changeup that, in my estimation, projects to be plus when it's all said and done. And I think the part that cannot be underestimated with Yobal is that he is a competitor. He's got special makeup from what I've experienced being around him in a short period of time and watching him compete on the mound. And I'm very, very excited to watch his development and progress once we're able to get him to the academy and going.
So that's David Keller, the new international scouting director for the White Sox and assistant to the general manager. Pretty big part of this part of the baseball calendar, and I believe we'll be hearing more from him as the offseason and as the start of the season, spring training, rolls around in just a little bit. Mark Burley is going to be at Sox Fest on Friday. And he was on with Carmen Yurko earlier this week. You're going to hear from Burley when we come back on White Sox Weekly. It's ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Sox fans, enter the Sox Fest sweepstakes for your chance to win two tickets to Sox Fest Live at Rimowa, presented by Rate, Beggar's Pizza, Blue Moon, and Wintrust Financial Corporation. Celebrate the start of the season alongside current and former White Sox players and coaches with live music, entertainment, and more. To enter, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestSweeps. Speaking of Sox Fest, one of the former players that's going to be at Sox Fest Live at Rimowa on Friday is the one and only Mark Burley. Burley was a guest of the Carmen and Yurko show the other day on ESPN 1000. I wanted to replay a bit of it here on the show. A couple of different reasons. One, Mark Burley's awesome. Two, he doesn't do a whole lot of press. Every now and again, we'll see Mark Burley stop by the broadcast booth, and he'll hang and talk with Len and DJ. And it's last year, I think, he went on the air and hung out for like an inning and a half or something like that. And that was maybe the first time he's done that. We'll see AJ around the broadcast booth a bunch, and he'll hop in and do part of the broadcast. But Burley is, you know, he's a tougher guy to get on the air. It's just not his jam. So when he, you know, is part of the process, when he's part of the interview circuit, and when he's talking, we're going to listen. The guys talk hunting. They talk about his save in Game 3 of the World Series. They talk about his not talking and his chances at the Hall of Fame. Again, Burley will be at Sox Fest Live on Friday this coming week. And Carmen Yurk started by asking Burley how he's feeling heading into the festivities this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, obviously you guys know, since I've retired, I haven't really done much interview stuff, many appearances. I'm not too big on all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I always said I got forced to do it when I played. So kind of when I got done playing and I was kind of on my own and didn't have to do anything, I kind of said, I'm just taking a step back and not getting involved, not getting, showing my face, not doing interviews. That's not really my thing anyway. So I just kind of took a back seat and just kind of viewing it from the outside in. But it'll be good to I don't even know who all is going to be there, but I know I'm just flying in for the day and flying out, so it'll be kind of short, but it'll be good to catch up with some of those guys I haven't talked to in a while.
What has life after baseball been like?
Freaking outstanding. just doing stuff around the house and hunting, getting properties ready for hunting season's coming up right now. You know, duck season just got over, deer season ends tomorrow, so it's everything's coming to an end on the hunting side, so just kind of getting a honey-do list together and done at home and cleaning stuff up and pretty much getting prepped up and ready to go for next year.
Do you guys still go after those annoying snow geese?
I'll do a little bit of it. There's actually a bunch of them in the area now, but that's one thing I haven't got into as far as getting the decoys and the spreads, because you got to get a bunch of them for that. So I usually just go with a buddy that has them, and we'll hunt them here and there, but it's mostly duck hunting and Canadian geese we'll go for.
What is your, like, to what extent do you still watch or follow baseball, maybe at any level, even if it's not the big leagues?
I still pay attention to it. I don't make myself sit down and watch games. There's actually times I'll be watching the news or something will be on late night laying in bed, and they'll be like, oh, the Cardinal game's on, and they're losing or winning or whatever. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, so I'll flip it over and watch an inning or two of it. But the only game that I've actually made myself sit down and watch, besides the playoffs, I'll watch some of those, but was opening day the year after I retired in 16, opening day of 2016, I sat down and watched, because it was the Blue Jays and the Yankees, and I obviously just playing with the Blue Jays, I knew a bunch of those guys. So I sat down at noon, sat there and watched the game, and I kind of thought, like, I wonder if I'm going to miss this at all and wish I was there. And I literally sat on my couch laughing my butt off because they're getting ready to start a whole grind of a season and I had nothing to do. And it was awesome. So haven't looked back since.
Yeah, as you say, you knew you weren't going to miss it. Mark Burley's our guest. It's Carmen and Yurk on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I mean, were you aware of just how bad last season was for the White Sox? Did you know what was going on, like setting a record for the worst season ever?
Not really. Not till the end when it got talked about a little bit more. I mean, I seen that they had a couple, about, I don't know, 20-game losing streaks or 15. They had some long losing streaks. And then once it got talked about. But like I said, I don't follow it close enough to pay attention to all that kind of stuff that's going on. But, you know, once they start talking about it on TV or sometimes on the radio, they talk about it, then I was more aware of it.
When we started this segment, we played the highlight of you getting the save in Game 3. So October 25th, 05. Obviously, you're not starting that game. You're not going to be used in that game. It would have been absurd to think that you were going to pitch in that game, but you famously come in the 14th inning for the save. Like, walk us through that a little bit, if you can remember it, and, like, when you had an idea that on a day where there was just no way you were going to pitch, all of a sudden it became evident that they might need your arm.
It got later in the game, I think, once we kind of went through. I think Freddie started the game, and I think once he came out, we kind of went through a pitcher or two, like, pretty quick, and then went through another one, and I was just kind of going down the list of who was available, like, starter-wise, if they needed somebody. And so I just kept going over to Cooper and being like, hey, you think you're going to need me? And he's like, no, get out of here. And I asked him, I don't know, seventh inning on maybe a couple times. And finally, whenever I finally asked him in like the 10th or 11th inning, he finally said, yeah, go get your crap on and get down there. I honestly thought he was just doing it like, get out of my hair and quit asking me because you're bugging me. So I went upstairs, got all my stuff on, got ready, and went down in the bullpen not expecting to be used, but obviously available if they need me to.
Is the story true that you had a couple of
cold ones,
adult sodas at some point that night?
It is absolutely true.
What was it of choice? What was the...
Every time, it was just some beer. Every time I would go over and ask Cooper, hey, Mike, you going to need me? He said no. I said, okay. So I went up, got a beer, and drank a beer, and then come back down 2 innings later or whatever. So, I mean, the story of AJ saying I was crocked and...
Yeah.
That part wasn't true. I mean... takes me more than a couple of beers to feel good. But.
Yeah, right. Do you ever go on AJ's podcast, by the way? He's got a big-time podcast.
I have not.
Can't believe he hasn't asked you to go on.
It's tough to get you on, I guess.
The only podcast I've done is for John Gibbons, the old manager for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
He had one going and texted me sometime and asked me, and I about crapped my pants realizing he had a podcast because he's one of the guys that... That's like me having a podcast.
That does seem odd. You're right. That old, like, John Gibbons would have a podcast. I didn't know that. You were one of the...
It was,
go ahead.
I don't know if he still has it. Obviously, now with being with the Mets, but he had one there for a year or two.
You famously were one of the fastest working pitchers in baseball. They got to a point here in recent years where it got so bad, games got so long, quite frankly, got so boring. That's coming from a diehard baseball fan, where they had to implement some different rules to try to speed the game up, get the ball in play, but specifically trying to get pitchers to work quickly. Have you noticed the pitch clock? And I know you said you don't really watch a lot, but, you know, can you imagine, first of all, I guess, when you were pitching, the league ever having to implement a device to speed pitchers up?
I would have loved it back then. I mean, it's funny because everybody always loved when I pitched, but the day I didn't pitch, I had to sit there on the bench for a 3 or 3.5 hour game, and I hated it. So I would have loved it back then just because it would have sped up the games that, you know, obviously when you're playing and you're pitching, you don't really pay attention if it's going to be a 2 hour game or a 5 hour game. It just, you're just in the mode of pitching and grinding and getting outs. But once you're sitting on the bench watching the game, you're sitting there looking at the clock all the time, like, Jesus Christ, this game's lasting forever. So I love it. I wish they would have implemented it way before I got out because it would have been way nicer on my end.
Yeah. How much do you ever think – I kind of have a feeling I know where this is going to go because, you know, you've told us how much you enjoy life, and you kind of always hinted at that when you played. You know, you talked about what you would do in the future, how much you like going back home, how much you liked hunting and fishing and things like that. Do you ever, you know, when it's time for, like, Hall of Fame, you know, you got upwards, I think, of 12, 13% one year. Do you ever think, like, hey, am I going to muster up enough interest amongst the voters to maybe make baseball's Hall of Fame or ever even get close to that threshold? Does it ever cross your mind?
No, I mean, about now, this time, and when the votes come out, you know, kind of follow it and probably pay attention, watch some of it. But, I mean, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't think I'm worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. Number-wise, you know, I don't have numbers that some guys do that aren't in there. Yeah, I had the 200 innings. I had a couple, you know, perfect game, no hitter that I tell people that that was just one game. That wasn't like over the course of your career. So I honestly don't know if I would get in. I don't think I will. But I think it's freaking amazing that I've lasted this long and stayed on the ballot, you know, fifth year, I think this is now, like, just to see my name on the ballot with the other people that's on there and I'm continuing to stay on there, that's enough for me. That's just mind-boggling in itself, you know, on my end. So if it ever gets there, I don't know. Do I think it will? No, but obviously anything can happen.
Try to explain to younger baseball fans, or really anybody, what you guys accomplished in 05 as a group of starting pitchers and to rip off those four consecutive complete games. You'd be lucky to see guys make seven innings, let alone four guys in a row go 9-9-9-9. I mean, it's one thing you guys should always hang your hat on. It's one of the cooler things that's probably happened in baseball this century. How do you explain something like that, what you guys accomplished?
Well, I mean, that's one thing that I've always taken pride in is going deep into games and eating up innings, because that was my job. So I don't think that'll happen again. Honestly, if I was in the game, coming into the game now or just had a few years in, I don't know if I would survive or if I'd be able to last, because of all the numbers that they look at and say, okay, this second time through the order, this guy's, you know, his numbers, they hit him way more, or the third time through the order. So I don't think I would have lasted in the big leagues nearly as long as I did now as I did back then. Just the way that the game has changed, and it's more by the book now and looking at numbers as opposed to, hey, this guy's pitching good. I don't care if the numbers say this, but he's still pitching good, so I'm going to just let him roll out there and keep on going. So that's one thing I've always taken pride in. I don't know. I don't think that will ever be broke or a team will ever do it again. I mean, you don't see many guys going 7, 8, 9 innings as it is now,
yeah.
Let alone in the playoffs. So I don't think that'll ever be broke.
Never.
It's, you know, again, Friday.
Yeah, you said the game has changed. Has it changed for the better?
I don't think so. I mean, some stuff it's changed. I don't like the bigger bases. I think that's ridiculous. The pitch clock, I love. The throwing over to first base two times or whatever, that's insane to me. But, yeah, as far as the speed of the game, I love that part of it. I mean, I went to a Cardinal game. I go to usually one or two games a year whenever a team comes in that, you know, like the Blue Jays, and I know some guys on there, I'll go down there. And I usually make it to about the fifth or sixth inning, and I'm like, all right, I'm done. Let's get out of here. And I think last year we went to a game, and it was like an hour and 20 minutes in the sixth inning. And I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it was actually enjoyable to watch the game for an hour and 20 minutes, and it was already the sixth inning instead of being in, like, the fourth. So
yeah.
That part I love. I don't like the number stuff. I don't like it's taking a lot off the manager's plate as far as pulling guys and putting guys in. It's not about their visual sight anymore. It's more about the guy upstairs that says, hey, this guy can only throw 62 pitches and then he needs to come out. Yeah. That part I hate.
Another minute with Mark Burley joining us on ESPN Chicago. You famously pitched, your arm was like rubber. I mean, you were resilient. You didn't miss games. What's the biggest culprit, if you have an opinion on this, too? All of the arm injuries that happen across baseball from very young levels all the way through the pros at this point?
I'm not 10-point dead set on something, but I've always joked around before they start to do studies and they're looking into all the injuries, but I attribute it to me not throwing hard, less wear and tear on my body, you know, on your joints and tendons and everything else. I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but, you know, I went through some aches and pains and I had some issues and I just dealt with it and took what I had to take to get out there on the mound because that was my job, and I didn't want to miss the start. So I did what I had to do to get out there every 5 days and go as deep into the game as I could and rehab and work out and get ready for your next start in 5 or 6 days, whatever it be.
Did you ever think baseball would see a player like Shohei?
No. That's pretty impressive to do on both sides of it. Obviously, just hitting last year, but, takes a lot out of a guy. I mean, it's like Travis Hunter in football, you know, playing both sides of the ball. I mean, that's you never get a break. I mean, you're nonstop. You get out from pitching, and then you got 4 days of hitting. So it's a lot of studying, a lot of film, and, you know, it's pretty impressive what he's doing.
All right, so are you in next Friday? You said you're coming in for the day. Are you going to be here Friday?
Coming in Friday, yep.
Coming in Friday. Sox Fest Live at the Romova Theater. You can buy tickets at MLB.com/White Sox to celebrate the festivities next weekend. They've got single day and different experiences available for the weekend for the 20th anniversary of the 05 team. Mark, you were a pleasure to watch, a pleasure to cover, and we know you don't like doing this all the time, but thank you for popping on. And I can't believe it's been 20 years since you guys won it all. But enjoy next weekend. Thanks for jumping on with us. We do appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Good talking to you.
There he is, the one and only Mark Burley. Big thanks to Carm and Yerk for their fine work on the interview as well. Looking forward to catching up with Burley this coming Friday at Sox Fest Live at the Romova Theater in Bridgeport. More White Sox Weekly when we come back on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight, and you can celebrate your special outing in 2025 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Maybe if you're in that party area next year, you can be in the front row. That brings me to... Well, that brings me to a big topic here on the show this afternoon. I know this is White Sox Weekly, but you know the amazing thing about baseball, about sports really, I guess, is that because it's a shared experience, because we as fans get to talk about our team with other fans of different teams, and it's this touch point. It's this, baseball is the national pastime, right? And yeah, it's kind of taken a back seat to the NFL and stuff over the last few years, but I don't know that any sport has a connection between fans and their broadcasters the way that baseball does. And for me, growing up as a kid in Wisconsin, having gone to high school in Appleton, Wisconsin, just about an hour and a half north of Milwaukee, half hour south of Green Bay. Don't worry, I grew up a Bears fan. Growing up in Wisconsin, I listened to Bob Uecker all the time. And we lost Bob Uecker on Thursday at the age of 90, longtime play-by-play man for the Milwaukee Brewers. He was a national broadcaster. He was a celebrity in all regards. Had his own television show. Mr. Belvedere was on the Johnny Carson show frequently. One of the funniest guys you'll ever meet, and I had the chance to meet him a time or two throughout the course of the last couple of years. Our very own Len Casper worked with Bob for several years in Milwaukee before Len left to take his play-by-play job, first one with the Miami Marlins in 2003. And before I get going about Bob Uecker, I thought who better to hear from than a guy who worked with Uke, who knew him pretty well, and your voice of the summer here on ESPN 1000 on the White Sox Radio Network. Len Casper shared some memories and some thoughts about Bob Uecker.
He... you know, was bigger than life. And I think the one comp on a baseball level would be Vin Scully. I think, you know, Bob and Vin were the two people that I think of when, you know, you ponder anyone in the ballpark, anyone in the press box, they all want to meet this person. The two people I think of are Vin and Uke. And, you know, he just... loved play-by-play, as I said. You know, he could have been a big fish in a huge pond like New York or Los Angeles or even Chicago, and yet he never wanted to leave Milwaukee. He wanted to be the play-by-play voice of his hometown team, and I always appreciated that about him. But that was enough. That's he just wanted to be at the ballpark every day when hanging with the guys. And that's what he did up until this past October. It's kind of staring us in the face, and I probably should have said it, but just be yourself. And Bob was an open book, and I think the self-deprecation was a huge part of it. Everybody has an ego. Certainly anyone who ever played in the major leagues, I'm sure, would be proud to tell anyone who didn't know that they played in the big leagues. But Bob turned that on its head And he would basically say, I played in the big leagues despite the fact that I was never very good. I know he was a great teammate, and everyone I ever talked to who played with Bob loved him to death. They just thought he was the greatest, funniest, most supportive teammate that they ever had. His home run call was, hey, get up, get out of here, gone. And he said that came from sitting in the dugout, and that's what the player reaction would be, right? So that's a home run call that was not manufactured. It was something that was very natural to him. I don't know if people know this, but in baseball we have the Mendoza line. If you look up the numbers, Mario Mendoza hit 215. The Mendoza line is 200. I'll just ask you all to check his career batting average after this call and see if we should change that. It's a sad day, but I know, you know, the one thing Bob would say is he always loved to make people laugh. And, you know, remembering a great career and a great human, there have been a lot of laughs today, along with some tears as well. And I'm sure Bob would be okay with that.
Thanks to Len for that. He shared that with White Sox beat reporters shortly after we found out the news of Bob Uecker's passing. But I still have a lot of friends in Wisconsin, and I was texting with one of them just yesterday. And he mentioned that he's got several coworkers who had taken the day off yesterday just to be with themselves and their families and other Brewers fans to talk about Uke. I'm sure as White Sox fans, you know who Bob Uecker was, and probably because we are geographically so close, you probably caught any number of Brewers games while you were driving through Wisconsin up on vacation or, you know, what have you, maybe out to the Dells or something like that. It was amazing listening to Uke, and I'll tell you a little story here. The summer after my freshman year of college, I worked at a paper factory in Appleton, Wisconsin. I was just kind of, you know, like the lowest guy on the totem pole working in one of the mills. We were coating giant reels of paper with different, like, surfaces. So, like, the receipts that you get printed out wherever, like the thermal imaging and stuff. That's what it was called. That's as much as I learned at this factory job. That's what we were coating this paper with. And one of my jobs was walking to the back of this giant machine. I mean, this machine was probably something like 45 to 50 feet long. And I would walk to the back of the machine. I would pick up the power washer filled with, you know, so it's a water gun, a power washer. And it was my job to use the power washer to spray off this coating, this residue that had been left on the giant rollers. I mean, thousands of pounds these rollers weighed that moved the paper through the machine and got it coated with this gunk. And it would stick. I mean, it would really get on there. So you had to pay attention and, you know, really work hard to spray all this stuff off before you put the next giant reel of paper on. This was, as you could probably tell, a little bit of a monotonous job. You would go and work and spray the reels off and then go back to your seat and wait for the reel to finish and then get up and do it all over again about 35, 40 minutes later. And there were some other cool stuff that you would do throughout the course of the job, like driving the forklift to the baler and throwing stuff in there. And, you know, you'd amuse yourself that way, at least I would, with that kind of stuff. But the entire time, every minute that I was there and the Brewers game was on, we had the Brewers game on. We were listening to Bob Uecker. And when I say we, I don't just mean me tooling around with the AM radio that I had strapped onto the forklift, although I did. And I don't just mean like the five or six or whatever it was, eight of us working at this machine. I mean the entire plant, everybody. I would drive this forklift, you know, in between these machines and back to the baler. And at each next machine, they would have the radio on, listening to Bob Uecker and the Brewers game. And I understand that, you know, you've probably got stories just like that, listening to White Sox games or Cubs games or Giants games or Dodgers games or what have you. But for Uke, I don't know, it just felt different. The way that he brought you through a game. And listen, this was, I mean, what, it was 2007? You know, so the Brewers were getting good. You had Prince Fielder and you had Richie Sexson, I think. And if you didn't, it was Corey Hart and Ricky Weeks and, you know, Tony Gwynn Jr. I mean, there were some big-time players on this Brewers team, and it was getting really exciting for Brewers fans. And you could feel it when you listened to Bob Uecker. So like I said, you know, this job was, it was pretty repetitive. And you know, when you would go back to your seat and wait for this giant reel of paper to finish, you would sometimes lose concentration. And if you were me, maybe you fell asleep a time or two. And you were not, you don't sleep on the job, right? I mean, regardless of what job you have, you don't fall asleep on the job. But it was important. It was specifically important here because we were working nights. It was 12-hour shifts, four on and three off or whatever it was. And it was really drilled into you, like, don't fall asleep while you're sitting in the chair waiting for the reels to finish. You got to make sure everything's going through okay. Well, I fell asleep. And thankfully, I was not caught. I was not reprimanded. My boss didn't find me because literally before my boss could round the corner, somebody, I wish I could remember who hit it, but somebody on the Brewers hit a home run to put the Brewers up late in the ball game. And there was Uke with the call. And I woke up from my chair, and it's this stupid little story, and it kept me out of trouble. And, you know, I never had the chance to tell that to Uke. I always felt weird. I'd seen him, and I always felt weird kind of telling him that story. And I guess that's why I'm kind of telling it to you the way I am now. I think the connections we have, especially with broadcasters who have been in their spot for so many years like Uke does, are so special. And I could sit there and listen, and I have, believe me, whether it's at Sox Fest or at games or whatever. I mean, I've listened to fans come up and tell me about, you know, the time they met Ed Farmer. I've listened to Sox fans come up and tell me about the time they got to spend, you know, a hole or two on the back nine with Hawk Harrelson because he was playing the same course, whatever it was. And that is just such an amazing thing to have. I mean, we, for the most part, we've got broadcast, and Uke was like this for a long time, lived in Milwaukee. You know, Hawk was in and around the area. Ed was, I mean, shoot, you know where Ed grew up. He told you every broadcast. And that matters. It really, really matters. And I think when we have that connection to our team via the voice, like we do with Len and DJ, it makes the baseball better, regardless of the outcome on the field, regardless of the quality of play, the ups and downs, whether the breaks are going your way. That brings you to a ball game. And I mean that literally, right? Like whether you're watching on the television or driving around on the highway, listening to us, like we want to bring you there. And Uke was just so incredible at bringing you to that game, at telling you the stories about, you know, the places he'd been and the failures he had. And I think that's another thing about Bob Uecker that makes him, that made him so incredible and so unique. He didn't shy away from the fact that he was a bad baseball player. I mean, you know, relative to the major leagues. I don't know that you could, I don't know that you could be a celebrity the way Bob Uecker was a celebrity. I don't know that being a play-by-play guy for a baseball team, save for a very special few, would in this day and age allow you to be as different as Uke was on the broadcast. I don't think it would allow you to be as funny as Uke was on the broadcast. I don't think it would, and I don't think it would give you the opportunities, the spotlight to take things and run with them the way that Bob Uecker did. On Carmen Yerk, on Friday, I did McKnight at the Movies. It's, if you haven't heard it, it's this little bit I do. I do play-by-play of a movie scene, and you have to guess what the movie is based on my play-by-play. And if I do my job well enough, we get a winner at the end of the segment, and somebody wins a cool prize on the Carmen and Yerko show. And for the movie, I picked Major League, even though I had done Major League almost a year ago to the date. But when I saw that Uke passed, I thought, well, listen, there are no rules on McKnight at the Movies. I can do a movie as many times as I'd like. I'm doing Major League again because we needed to. And I picked the bit where, you know, of course, Ricky Vaughn comes in, rookie sensation. It's the sixth. Kellner departs the game, thank God. That's what Uke says. And it's, you know, ball one, just a bit outside. Tell me how many times you've been to a ball game and seen a guy uncork one to the backstop, and the guy sitting behind you says, just a bit outside. He's part of the game and always will be. And he meant a lot to me. He meant a lot to me, and he meant to a lot to baseball fans everywhere, not just those north of the border. And it is it's a sad day, but one that's going to be looked back on with a lot of smiles because of what he gave to the game of baseball. So a salute to Bob Uecker, and we'll think about Bob and look forward to our next time playing against the Brewers, because we'll have a chance to tell a lot more Bob Uecker stories. More White Sox Weekly when we come back. We'll wrap things up on the other side. It's ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Closing it up here on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Went a little long here this afternoon, so we got to wrap things up. Big thanks to Jack McGrath, our producer on the other side. I will see you at Sox Fest Live at the Rameau Theater on Friday and Saturday this coming week. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you next Saturday for more White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.